Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the final episode of 2020 of Technology Uncorked. My name is Jeff Quattromani, and this show is brought to you by Navman. Now, it was just on the weekend that I was filling in for Charlie Brown on 2GB and 4BC on Talkback Radio, and I had a caller come through who was driving a large minibus. I think it was like a holiday home, and he wanted a dash cam and navigation unit, and I thought, is this a trick question? Because I immediately thought about, obviously, Navman. Now, not just because they're a sponsor of the show, but because they're the only one who I know does this two-in-one type device. Now, it's called the MyCam. The particular model that I recommended to this gentleman was the MyCam Explorer. It's got a 7-inch display, so it's nice and large, which will look good when it's attached to his minibus, say, front window. But the other thing that I really liked about this, and the reason I recommended this unit to him, was that it's also got large vehicle assist. And that means that while he is driving, and he types in a destination from A to B, it's going to keep the vehicle measurements in mind to make sure that he can take the corners, he can go underneath those bridges and things like that. So you often find a lot of trucks and things like that tend to get stuck going underneath railway bridges, or they're trying to turn a corner that's just not suited for the length of their vehicle. This particular unit from Navman will stop that from occurring, and he immediately had no idea that these sort of things existed, and I was glad to point him in the right direction. Obviously, with that dash cam capability as well, I've been testing one in my car since it came out, and I love it. I love referring to the footage. I love looking back at it, and the quality is fantastic, including obviously those GPS coordinates and your speed, which is all really important factors if something was to go wrong. So anyway, I helped that person on the phone, and hopefully I'm helping one of you today. Now, if anybody out there does want to buy a Navman unit, any Navman unit, anything from their store, you can get 20% off by using the code Jeff20, G-E-O-F-F-2-0. It's available until the end of January. So even if you didn't get a Navman for Christmas, never fear, you can still go and order a Navman unit and get 20% off your price. Now, let's think about the 2020 year that was. You all had a really good Christmas and hopefully got to spend some time with family, whether it was, you know, via video link or in person. I know that this year Christmas was very different for everybody, and we'll talk a bit about that as well later in the show. But today I have cracked open, as the last podcast for 2020, a glass of Shiraz. This is from the Adelaide Hills, from a vineyard called Petaluma. It's a yellow label B&V vineyard. This is a really lovely bottle of wine. Now, I'm usually a Barossa guy. I love my thick, juicy reds. This is very, very close. That Adelaide Hills obviously is quite close in proximity anyway. But this, I'm getting a lot of red berries, a little bit of white pepper, some spiciness to it, but even a little bit of floral taste to it, which you wouldn't normally get in a Barossa red. And that's where this is slightly different, where it's got that sort of sweeter uplift. But this is going to keep me company through the rest of the show. If anybody out there is interested in buying one of these ones, they're about $50-odd. Do shop around. You can get them for around the $45 mark in other places, but obviously available at your usual retailers. A really nice bottle of red. And to be honest, if you're in Sydney, you'll understand why I've chosen a red wine for today. It's raining. It's been raining all week. It's probably going to be raining on New Year's Eve. So rather than some bubbles, as I would normally do in a celebration type episode, we're keeping it different with a Shiraz today. Now, we are going to go over the year that was 2020. It's been a crazy year. I don't think anyone can say that this year has been a normal year or a predictable year at all. We're going to talk about sort of the winners and losers of the year. I want to be very critical and also very complimentary where applicable. I want to talk about the trends that happened in 2020. We're going to talk about connectivity, how we lived and worked virtually, and also the impact on our home. And I think as we start to think about all the different products that came out this year, where our focus was, our home was all that we thought about. It was not about the workplace. It wasn't about commuting. It wasn't about jumping on planes. It was all about our home. So we're going to talk about that too. And I'm also going to announce the two winners of the Oppo phones, an A53s and an A52. Thank you to everybody who has entered, left a review, SMS'd me and things like that. I will be absolutely announcing those winners as we go throughout the show as well. But let's get started with what I'm going to call a winner and a loser of 2020. Now, once 2020 kicked off, we had all gone to CES, come back, and realistically, after that was when things started to derail a little bit. We couldn't go to Mobile World Congress. That was a trip planned and cancelled, where we would normally have then heard about mobile events, mobile devices and things like that at that show. Things got pretty derailed. And what I mean by that as well is that companies which were planning particular announcements postponed. Companies which would normally encourage or fly journalists to a location to announce their products were postponed. And one company in particular, which was very slow out of the gate for 2020, was Apple. And we didn't really see a lot from Apple until the third and fourth quarter of the year, where seemingly they had an announcement or an event almost every 2 weeks. It was quite chaotic towards the end of the year, and you could see that it didn't feel organized. And obviously COVID does have that impact, but you know, we had the iPhone 12, the new iPads, the Apple Watches, the AirPods Pro Max, all announced in a very staggered fashion. We had the MacBook Pro upgrade. We just had all these weird things going on, and you could tell the impact that COVID had on companies as large as Apple. And obviously, if it impacts them and their schedule, then no wonder it impacts every other business around the world when I guess they're one of the biggest, obviously. Now, thinking of some of the wins and losers, I think, for Apple is important. And one of the ones I want to start with is actually quite specific to Australia, and I'm sorry for international listeners here, but the ECG function on the Apple Watch has been, from a hardware point of view, available for almost 4 years. And when you do that and never make the software available in Australia, something seems fishy. And for that many years, up until 2020, we had always assumed that Apple was going through the process, that Apple was probably just struggling with the TGA process of getting it approved to be used in Australia. And then Withings, or Withings, a company which many had not heard of, a company which is 1% the size of Apple, released their new smartwatch, and it's called the Scan Watch. I'm actually still wearing it. Out of the gate, from day one of launch in Australia, it was TGA approved for the ECG function. It was the first in Australia to actually allow that. Now, this isn't just Apple that I'm biting at here. Samsung, Fitbit, both of you have watches that are ECG compatible, but are not approved for use in Australia. So my question is this: Apple clearly were not going through the TGA process, and I don't even know if they have started it. No one will confirm or deny it. And it's, to me, a huge failure on Apple's behalf to be continually selling and advertising a watch that can do these functions and never actually bringing it to Australians. I think it's sad. I think it's weak. I'm disappointed by that. And I think when you can have a company like Withings come in, release this watch with TGA approval, and to be clear, this watch was announced at CES in January. So we're not talking about a product that existed for 4 years and then was approved. This is a product that was announced in January and released on sale around August with TGA approval. So in my goal here, Apple, lift your socks up. If you're going to sell products and you're going to advertise their capabilities, actually release it with them working. And I really think the pressure is on for all of these brands to start actually going through the process, is actually start giving a bit more of a crap about those on the ground in countries where maybe your largest audience is, but it's still an audience. So I think that's one I would love to see happen. The other thing, obviously, is the iPhone 12. Now, there is no denying that when Apple announced the iPhone 12, all of which have 5G, that most of the world realized that 5G existed. That in itself has to be, I guess, a congratulations to Apple. 5G devices have been around, obviously, for a couple of years. They perhaps didn't get the attention that they were going to until Apple did it. Finally, Apple did do it. And what was nice to see was that Apple put 5G on every single one of those phones. What was disappointing was that the iPhone 12 saw the removal of the charging brick. Not many people will care about that, but I think that was a thing that was missing. They said it was for green purposes or sustainability purposes. The box was obviously then smaller. Shipping costs would obviously be lower as well. But the price of the cheapest iPhone 12 was higher than the iPhone 11 of last year. And I just think that when you're taking things out of the box, you're seriously going to be saving money from a number of different areas, and then you're raising the price. I think that was disappointing to see. The volume, as in the storage capacity on the devices, has not gone up. And I think when you're trying to do improvements and then want to charge more for it, and your biggest claim is that it has 5G, I think that's a bit of a disappointment. The other thing I'll say to that too around 5G is that while the iPhone 12 has 5G, it was amazing this year to see devices from Samsung at the $500 mark that also had 5G as well. So that was a really nice thing to see. Obviously, with the iPhone 12, we also saw the gold release of the new iOS version, which brought with it widgets. It also brought the app library as well. And when I am using an iPhone, I actually really love the operating system now. I use that home screen with widgets and the most used apps. For everything else, I go straight to the app library. I don't have multiple windows of apps anymore. The app library serves a really good purpose. And I think that that is the best version of iOS that I've ever seen. It seems to be the least buggy. I'm really enjoying it. And it's one other reason why people won't be rushing back to Android when we talk about widgets and things like that. So a really nice one. And then we also saw the announcement of the iPods Max. Now, I've done more radio about the iPods Max than I think I did on the iPhone 12. And that says something. The sad thing is, though, is that most of the radio coverage that I did on the AirPods Max was around the insane price. And look, I still haven't tried a pair on, and I can't comment on the audio quality. In fact, I never have. What I do comment on is its competitors. And when I look at its competitors, which I have tested, whether it's the Bose 700s, the Sennheisers, the Sony XM4s, and even Bowers & Wilkins PX7s, they all come in under $500. And when you're asking me a question of what I think of the AirPods Max, I just look at price and I say, well, look, for $900, I could not justify it, given that I know how good the audio quality is out of headphones less than $500. My immediate recommendation is buy two pairs, one for yourself, one for your wife, instead of getting one pair of the AirPods Max. The AirPods Max may sound better, and I would hope that they do, but could they sound twice as good? Not a chance. And that is really just based on me having worn those other brands significantly for long flights, for long times at my desk, and understanding just how good they are. So it would take a mean feat for any pair of headphones to justify a $900 price tag. And I was a bit disappointed to see Apple do that. Further to that, beyond audio quality, I always talk about the fact that it doesn't come with a cord. Even though they're a pair of Bluetooth headphones, when you do fly in an airplane, you usually want to plug in to the in-flight entertainment system. You can't do that with the AirPods Max without buying an additional cord. That's a bit of a downfall. The other thing to it as well is that it comes with a carry case that looks more like a bra. And that's not a very nice carry case. It's not something that you really want to be seen in an airport lounge pulling out of your bag. It looks silly. So with that said, they are selling them like mad. People clearly have the money out of 2020. I think that while COVID has been terrible for some people, for some it's meant that they are spending more time at home, less time spending on commuting, less fuel in the car, less holidays, and they've had some disposable income. And I think that's where the AirPods Max are making their sales, from those who've got that spare change rattling in their pocket. And kudos to them. Apple also this year announced a new chipset. And for a lot of people, we don't care. But what's important to note here is that while Apple has been doing some interesting things on the fringes, like the AirPods Max, the interesting part that they're doing is innovating from the inside and breaking their relationship with Intel to now build their own chips means that they're not paying a supplier for their internal components. And you can see where this will go in that Apple will further and further move themselves away from leveraging suppliers like Intel, whoever they get their camera lenses from and things like that, to continue to do it in-house. Because the more you do in-house, the more cost savings you have, the more profit you make, but also the more innovative you can be with your own product. And by Apple having the M1 chip inside their computers means that it's something no one else has. In the past with Intel, there was some shared technology between them and any other brand. You won't have that now. And I think Apple will continue to do that across their phones, iPads. I think they'll start getting into their own displays. There's a lot of further innovation that can happen from the inside that don't necessarily look like a whole new product line or anything like that, but it's things that live underneath the products that we're already planning on buying. And I think it's a very smart move from Apple. It's also a very cheeky thing to do. I'm sure that the people at Intel were not happy by that announcement. I'm sure they saw it coming, but you can just imagine what that means for Apple's bottom line. I think if you're a shareholder, you're probably quite pleased with that change. The other thing that is going to be interesting, and I talk about innovating from the inside, one thing that Apple does very well is innovate by learning from those who already support them. And it's an interesting thing that they do where people who make apps, services, or products which are compatible with Apple devices, 9 times out of 10, Apple can learn from that and do it themselves. And we saw it happen with Fitness Plus. Now, fitness apps have existed for a long time. Workout apps have existed for a long time. Apple, when they chose to do it themselves, have now probably killed that market. And this was obviously the same when you think about headphones. Since when were Apple making headphones? Since their other brands started to make headphones that were compatible with them. Same thing with chargers and things like that, like wireless charging. Apple now do that too. Anyway, with Fitness Plus, Apple has created a really nice platform, a very good-looking platform, one that integrates tightly with their watches, with an Apple TV, with a phone, much better than anyone else can, and that's because it's their product. So when you have the hardware, you can naturally make better software for it. Everybody else is just making software that tries to adapt within the limitations that they've been given. So look, a really smart move by Apple. It's certainly woken up everybody else, and I would watch closely to see what Samsung does with this. Let's not forget, Samsung makes televisions and the phones and the watches. So when they decide to put a fitness platform across all three, the deployment of that's going to be pretty damn simple. I think that's going to be a space we need to watch. So that's what Apple has been done. And look, I think there are some highs, there are some lows from Apple. There is about 10 minutes of me talking about it. Let me know what you think. What was Apple's scorecard this year? Is it an A+? Is it a C? Let me know what you think. I think it's been controversial from Apple. I think they've had a disorganized year, but they've pulled out some great stumps, and some things like the M1 processor, we may not feel, but we'll certainly know it's there. And we're going to know it's there for many, many years to come. So next year, I wish well for Apple. I would actually love to see myself testing more of their devices. And maybe if anyone from Apple's listening, we can have a chat, maybe respond to my emails at some point. But anyway, that's the year for Apple. Now, first of all, before I get into my next topic for 2020, I want to quickly give a shout out for the Oppo A53s. The winner of that, I'm giving to Ausbeno, Ausbeno, for entering the competition, for leaving your review. Again, I stress this, that this is not what was written in the review that makes you win. It is a random pick from a spreadsheet after pulling in all the names of those who did leave a review. So Ausbeno, or maybe Ausbeno, stay tuned. I'll be getting in touch with you to get your address and get that device out to you, the Oppo A53s. Honestly, I think it's one of the stronger mid-range phones on the market at the moment. Now, this year, one of the things I wanted to talk about was connectivity. And if there was ever a year where connectivity mattered more, it was 2020. I have not seen a focus so strong on how we connect with one another. In a world where we're largely stuck at home, we can't necessarily even leave our homes to go anywhere, whether it's catching up with friends or family. It's amazing how much connectivity became an important factor. And how often in the past did we used to talk about, oh, the internet, remember how we used to all get by before that? Well, honestly, this year, I don't think we all could have gotten by without it. You know, if you think about the way that we lived in 2020, if your internet was down, that would have been a very isolating experience, especially for a lot of people who live by themselves. So connectivity has been, for me, the gold star of the year. You think about 5G and the advances in 5G. All three networks in Australia now have a 5G network working. The Telstra network is far, far stronger and wider spread than the Optus or Vodafone network. However, we're starting to see innovations into how we use 5G. And we're not talking about just on the mobile device. We're talking about how 5G is also used to serve homes. And Optus has done a very good job of looking at homes that are served poorly by the NBN and focusing on 5G rollouts in those areas where you can sign up to a internet service using 5G, and the speeds have been extremely impressive. 5G in itself, while being now supported by more devices, being supported by more networks, has not necessarily shown us its true potential. I really think that in 2021 and beyond, we're going to start seeing the use of 5G in much greater areas. We haven't seen cars leverage a 5G network. We haven't seen cities leveraging a 5G network. We're only talking about mobile devices and home internet connections to do the things that we already could do before, perhaps at a slower speed. The real advantage of 5G and what's going to come is when it's deployed into cities. And what I mean by deployed into cities, I mean on infrastructure. When the traffic lights can communicate with the car. When a person's phone who's crossing the road can communicate with the cars around it. That's when you start to have a very strong mesh of communication that can only really be moved on a network like a 5G one, which has such low latency. And what I mean by that is this. Imagine a car of the future, and we always talk about the future, but imagine a car of the future that's driving around a bend. And before the human eye can see it, the car knows that there is someone who's fallen over in the middle of the road. And it knows that because their phone signal is still in the middle of the road. And it's communicating that way with the car. What if the traffic lights are communicating a red signal to the car so that if the driver does not pay attention, the car knows. And the car knows to stop. What if there are roadworks happening in the middle of the road and a 5G beacon can communicate with the cars around it to either suggest to take a different route or to stop and go around? The way that 5G can really start to impact people's lives is when things start talking to things. We're not talking about just what our phones can do from streaming Netflix. We're talking about 5G in a sense of creating that mesh network where everything's talking to one another and it's knowing about things before you know about things. And that's when you've got a really smart city. That's coming. I've seen demonstrations of it and it does require some real innovation, but it requires a lot of things to be replaced. A lot of things that we talked about require a lot of infrastructure changes, and that's coming. So I think 5G has a long way to go, but it was good to see 5G become the norm. People who are buying smartphones this year from $500 can be getting a 5G phone. I think that's always a wise investment to make. The other thing I want to talk about here when it comes to connectivity is Starlink. Now, Starlink, which is Elon Musk's satellite internet puppy, has grown phenomenally. And we spoke about this last week where somebody in the United States received one of the Starlink satellites for their home. They were currently, sitting on less than a couple of meg download speeds. They put the Starlink satellite outside, ran the cable into their modem inside their home, and they were getting over 100 megabits. The huge benefits of Starlink will impact Australia bigger than what the NBN has. And what I mean that in a sense that there are so many homes in Australia who are leveraging satellite NBN. And satellite NBN sits twice the distance away from Earth that Starlink does. Starlink satellites can actually be seen on a clear night. They almost look like a centipede in the sky, almost like a joining of stars that are flying. If you can produce 100 megabits to country New South Wales, country Queensland, and the Northern Territory and places like that, the benefits that you bring to us connecting cities to the country is far greater. The ability to run an online business from the country is far stronger. And I think if you want to build a country that sits on a level playing field, whether it's education, doctor services, or even just running a business or working, remote working, Starlink could actually play a huge area in that. And I cannot wait to see this thing available in Australia. Will it be next year? Will it be 2022? We're yet to know. Things are obviously very under the covers with this on Tesla's side, but I cannot wait to test it myself. I can't wait to try Starlink and see how it does compare where I live. I mean, I'm lucky. I'm on the good NBN. And the NBN is something I also want to touch on. At the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the pandemic, the government was very good in encouraging that the NBN bandwidth be expanded so that people working from home would not suffer from congestion. And they were really good at doing that. A lot of telcos also picked up their game and allowed you to have more downloads and made sure that you were going to get the most out of your internet connection so that you could work from home. Despite all the political banter that goes on around the NBN, I think we can probably say this year that we all appreciated the fact that it at least existed. Whether you've got the good version of the NBN or you've got the poor man's version of the NBN, the majority of homes who have an NBN connection have the ability to sign up to 100 megabits. And if that's you, then you were able to work from home, you were able to have special occasions over video link from home, and you're able to actually get through this year, I think, in a much better way than you would have had you still been on ADSL. And I think this has got to be a huge credit to the NBN. They're not going to get it. Nobody's going to stand up and actually applaud them. But I don't think we've ever been more grateful for having a better network than ADSL. The question will always be, well, what if I had fiber? I could have had an even better internet connection. Well, maybe that's true, but maybe by 2020, you wouldn't have had it. And had we had to wait till 2021 before we all got fiber connections, maybe we wouldn't have had a very good 2020. So I think from my end, I'm happy with the way that the NBN has gone. I'm also happy that they're allowing this choice program where you can choose to upgrade if you actually want to spend the money to run fiber optic all the way to your home, and you can go and get an instant quote online to do that. And I encourage you to do that if you are interested, because sometimes the figures can blow your mind. But it is interesting to see. So I think this year, connectivity overall, whether it's 5G, Starlink, or the NBN, have had huge advances, have had a huge benefit and a huge impact on our year, on our ability to spend time with friends, family, and also to work. And I think anybody who's been stuck at home for more than 8 hours a day, logged onto Zoom calls and things like that, I think you've been very lucky. And that's what we're going to talk about next, actually, is Zoom, Teams, Google Meets, all the things that most of us maybe never even used until 2020. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but it's got to be acknowledged that prior to 2020, there's a handful of people or a very small percentage of people who knew what a Zoom was or who knew what a Teams meeting was. A lot of us knew what Skype was or what or Facebook Messenger was, but not many of us probably joined a Zoom meeting. I had, but it wasn't something that I could necessarily talk to seniors about and have them know exactly what I was talking about. But now things like Zoom, Teams, Google Hangouts, they've become household names. And they've been the tools that we've actually used to catch up, to spend time with one another, to celebrate birthdays, to celebrate Easter, and for some of us to celebrate Christmas. And I think whether you're connecting with people down the road, people overseas, or people at work, we've had to rely on virtual meeting tools more than ever. And it was amazing that in the past, while we had virtual meeting tools, a lot of us just treated them like teleconferences, where you would join them, just audio only, you would talk, maybe you'd be looking at a presentation, and that was it. This year, it was cameras on, it was virtual backgrounds fired up, it was drinking games, it was bingo, it was just everything and anything. And it's been amazing to see how much this has been picked up. Housing inspections were carried out over Zoom. Auctions were carried out over Zoom. You could see your doctor and meet with them in a virtual meeting. The ways that we started to connect in 2020 because of the pandemic completely changed. And as always, as bad as the pandemic was, the technology changes or the pushes that tech trends received because we were forced to do so is phenomenal. And I hope a lot of these things stick around. I hope that more and more people can just join a virtual meeting to see their doctor. Why on earth were we even thinking about taking our sick selves out into the public, sitting in a doctor's room, then sitting down with a doctor to tell him that we had a cold? Like, I don't understand how this was always a thing. So the idea of having virtual meetings, even for attending an open home, why did we have to go there ourselves if we weren't feeling well? Join a virtual meeting. And from a work perspective, it certainly meant that a lot of us could continue to work. I understand a lot of businesses could not open, whether you were a takeaway or a restaurant or whatever it was. A lot of businesses you can't just go virtual with. I loved to see how so many places and people went virtual to keep their business running. I know a lot of personal trainers who would normally be used to training people face-to-face went to virtual meetings where they would actually get groups on a Zoom call and run classes. There were people who were running cooking classes for a business over Zoom. There were people who were doing wine tastings over Zoom as well. And I think if you were somebody in 2020 who did not pivot, adjust, or make changes in your business and life to suit the world that you were actually living in, you're having a worse year than you should have. And I'm not meaning that in a harsh way, but there are so many ways to deal with this drama and disaster that's happened this year. And for some, it's been to sit on their hands and complain. And it's been amazing to see those who chose to try and do things differently or to keep things moving who have maintained their success. And this comes into all areas. If you think about restaurants who started to do home delivery, heck, I remember some of the 5-star restaurants in the city who were happy to do a Uber Eats or happy to do a delivery order because it meant their chefs could still be employed. There were a number of bars who started doing home delivery cocktails because it would keep their bar staff employed. These were the changes that I loved to see. resilience in the face of adversity. I think that's something that virtual meetings has allowed us to do, is to keep going. And the biggest interest around that from a product perspective has been webcams. It was crazy to me how the sales of webcams went through the roof. You couldn't walk into an Officeworks and find one. You literally would walk in there and the shelves were bare, completely bare. Mice, keyboards, monitors, and webcams just disappearing off the shelves. And it was crazy. I remember earlier in the year doing radio, TV, all sorts of stuff around setting up your home office. I mean, it's true that a lot of us didn't have that ready to go. Most people took their computers to work, or they left their computers at work and that was where they did their work. When you were told to come home and do that, maybe for the first week it was okay to hunch over your laptop, but afterwards it was, no, I need a screen. I need a proper keyboard and mouse. And it was crazy how supply just did not keep up with that. You know, we were so close for a number of years about the death of the computer. Oh, I just use my iPad now. Oh, I just use my iPhone now. And suddenly we're all rushing out to get big screens, keyboards, mice, and webcams so that we can continue to work. I mean, what an absolutely amazing learning experience has been for everybody. And the best bit is that we're all ready to do it again if we have to. I think if you've got a webcam, you've got a monitor, you've got this little desk set up in your home, while you probably didn't hope it would be permanent, if it ever happens again and you have to work from home again, you can. And second to that, if you aren't having conversations with your manager or boss about how you can have a hybrid work week where you spend some days working from home and some days working from the office, if you aren't challenging the status quo around returning back to the office 5 days a week, you should be. You should be thinking about your work-life balance and how you can make it work better for you. If you can focus better at home, you can get more work done at home. Why are you rushing to the office? I think people should be thinking about that more in 2020. I certainly have no plans to return to a 5 day work week in the office. It just doesn't make sense to me. I was so productive when I was at home. I get a lot more work done. And I also have this benefit of actually being home at the time that my day ends without the 1 hour commute home and without leaving home an hour earlier so that I could get there on time as well. It's just crazy. So virtual meetings and all the things that went around it, that was a huge highlight of 2020. Now, I want to give a shout out to, I'm going to spell it again, MOLLOBEEL, Mollobeel. That's your username that you left a review for the podcast. You've just won the Oppo A52. This is a really nice little smartphone as well. Might be fantastic for you, might be even better for your kids or your parents. I think it's actually, I've always said this, giving a good smartphone with good cameras to your parents, especially if you've got kids, is a really good idea. It means that when they take photos, they're good photos. And that means that you'll get a copy of them and they'll actually look really good. Just a bit of a recommendation. But congratulations to, I'll try and say it, Mollobeel, an Oppo A52 heading your way. Look out for an SMS from me asking for your address. Now, the last thing I want to talk about from 2020 is our homes and the changes that happened in our homes in 2020. And it's not just going to be all about the pandemic and the impact it's had on our homes. I'm going to start the other way around. I'm going to go from January. In January at CES, the amount of innovations I saw around the smart home was phenomenal. And if you go back maybe 50 odd episodes ago, you'll see my coverage from CES and you'll hear all the stuff that we saw there, whether it was washing machines, TVs, sinks, faucets, I should say, shower heads, doors, everything got smarter. One of the ones I just mentioned was the faucet. I used to just call it a sink tap. You know, the hose part that comes off the sink with the two taps on either side. It's called a faucet. Very formal word. Maybe it's just not. Maybe everyone's looking at me like I'm a bogan. But there was a product from a company called Moen, M-O-E-N, and it was a smart faucet. And, you know, for me, that was a real wake-up call to what the smart home can do. The tap with a hot and cold on either side, or maybe it's a two-in-one tap if you're fancy enough, didn't seem like an area where I thought I'd see innovation. But here is a faucet that you can use your smart home to control by voice. And you might just think, how silly. Why would I want to turn my tap on through voice when I can quickly do it with my hands? Fair call. But tell me, can you walk up to your tap and pour 100 mils of water without a measuring cup? That's what you could do with this. So you could walk up to this tap and you could be like, hey, voice assistant, give me 100 mils of water and it will do it when you put your cup underneath it. Or, hey, whatever, fill my water bottle. And if you've already told your tap how many mils are in your bottle, you're going to get a full bottle. Or if you said this, give me 200 mils of 80 degree water, or water at 80 degrees, I think the command was, then you can get your water poured hot. This was a smart move. And anyone who's ever followed a recipe before, sometimes you actually do need these kind of measurements from the tap, and you won't need a measuring cup to do that. Just an example. So the smart faucet was the first indication in January that the smart home is about to get crazy. We then had washing machines that talked to the dryer to tell it what kind of load to expect. We saw crazy machines that would essentially shake your clothes so that it wouldn't need ironing anymore. You would basically put it in like this closet and it would do all this magical stuff with steam and shaking, and you would open it up and your t-shirts and pants would be ready to go. We saw innovations in the kitchen far beyond anything, whether it was a smart fridge, smart washing machine, not washing machine, microwave that you could talk to, your ovens, your dishwashers, all of these things could be controlled. I mean, walking up to your microwave and instead of using the buttons and panels and dials on the front, you would just say, heat for 30 seconds, shut the door and bang away it goes. Asking your smart speaker what's in the fridge. Suggest a recipe based on what's in the fridge. Or reorder some butter. Put this on the shopping list. Checking what's inside the fridge from the shops while you're out, looking through cameras that are built into your fridge. These are things that are now available at the end of this year. And we saw them happen throughout the year. And I think the smart home continues to evolve, and I absolutely love it. I think the smart home is going to continue to change even more in 2021. In fact, this week we had an announcement from LG, a little bit premature from CES, but you'll hear more about that next week, where there is LG is bringing a fridge to market where you just walk up to the fridge and say, open the door, and the door opens. So you don't have to actually, if you've got your hands full, maybe you've got a bottle of wine in one hand and another bottle of wine in the other hand because you've got two for some reason. When you walk up to the fridge, you just say, open the fridge, door swings open. You drop your two bottles of wine in the fridge door and away you go. That's where we're going. So I think the smart home has continued to change. And I think that the innovations we saw in the smart home this year were probably the most exciting. And that could be because we spent more time at home. And it was interesting to see how much this changed, where we had a huge focus on our home theaters. And I guarantee you that 50, 60% of people listening to this show have a new TV this year. Harvey Norman, all our electronics retailers, were flooded with people upgrading their televisions. You couldn't go to the cinemas, so guess what? You're enjoying more movies at home. Maybe you're in lockdown especially. So you went from having a 50-inch TV to a 65 or a 75 or even an 82-inch TV as they all started to become much more affordable. They became a bigger deal. We started to see soundbars, home theater systems really fly out the door. Some of the best gear that I tested this year was an LG OLED TV and the Sonos Arc soundbar. Those two products blew my mind, and they perfectly pair together as a nice little home theater if you're upgrading. The stock flew off the shelves, and it was interesting to hear from retail giants that the pandemic was the best thing that ever happened to them. And that's crazy to hear, but it says a lot about the way that we all dealt with the pandemic as well. We did what we had to do to make our in-home lives more comfortable. And I think next year, a lot of us will stick to those sort of processes. A lot of us won't go back to cinemas because we've invested in such an amazing setup that we'll want to continue to enjoy those. And companies like Warner Brothers, who make movies, announced themselves that in 2021, they want to be bringing movies to streaming services at the same time as the cinema release, which means that you could potentially be watching, I think there's a new Space Jam movie, for example, coming out, and you could watch that on streaming at the same time as it hits cinemas. I mean, why wouldn't you if you've invested in your own home theater system? The smart home, as I said, made some big changes. We saw some cool innovations there as well. I do remember Amazon releasing one of their innovations, which was essentially a flying drone inside the home that would do surveillance. Crazy ideas, but these are the things that we love. These are the innovations that we love to hear about, and it was great to see that Amazon was still focused on doing something like that. We saw a company like Linksys, who make home routers, tell us that they could essentially know whether someone is in the home, whether someone has broken into your home based on interruption of their Wi-Fi streams. So as Wi-Fi routers beam signal across the home, they were able to use multiple beacons to tell you whether there was movement in a home. And if you weren't home, guess what? You've got an intruder. And there was a service called Linksys Aware that took your Wi-Fi beams and made them your home security system. This stuff is crazy, and it's the stuff that we absolutely love to see when it comes to technology and innovation. And obviously, I can't finish 2020 without at least mentioning two major gaming consoles hit the market this year, the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox One, Xbox Series X, I should say. And what's funny to me is that while the consoles have more power than Apollo 11, they also became as rare as hen's teeth. And it was crazy this year to hear about the mass sales of these products and how quickly they were sold out and how popular they seemed to be. Yet when it came to launch day, we all quickly realized that the strategy behind these consoles, or the buyers of these consoles, was to buy multiple and sell them at a higher price or an elevated price. And it changed the way that gamers start thinking about pre-sales, or it certainly changed the way that a lot of us think about pre-sales. This was sad. This was sad that you had most people buying these consoles as a form of business. They would literally be buying them so that they could make a profit from on-selling them. I didn't see it coming, so I'm certainly upset that I didn't jump on that bandwagon. But I also realized from a gamer's point of view how sad this was to see. And you could see it online that people who are passionate about gaming couldn't get hold of a console that they perhaps had been saving up a long time to get. And it was amazing to see how disappointed they were that there were no controls in place, that there was no way of controlling this kind of dodgy business as it was seen to prevent this from happening. And, you know, a gaming console that sold for $750 would sell, I'm not talking about would go on sale, would sell on eBay for well over $2,000. So the profits were there. So it was crazy to see. But I will just say with those gaming consoles, while I looked at both of them, enjoyed both of them, I still have one of them here. They have so much power, but we need to wait till next year to really enjoy it, because I think the games at the moment just don't take full advantage of that. So that's where I'll end the 2020 wrap. And the next part I want to talk about is very quickly about 2021. As we are around a week away from CES 2021, I need to quickly say that there has been so much announced under embargo and set to go live very, very soon. CES 2021 is meant to start mid-January. Next week, I'll be talking about CES, as in things that are announced as part of CES. Companies are firing off early, and I'm going to be talking about them. The other thing that I'm going to say, I think in 2021, we're going to continue to see a lot more focus around the home. I know that Australia is doing well out of this pandemic, but every other country is not. And I think what that means from a product and innovation point of view is we're going to continue to see innovation in the home. Whether that is around all those things I've been talking about, connectivity, virtual meetings, and the products that we use to survive while we're stuck at home, I think that's where brands will continue to focus. Not many Australian brands doing the innovating for us or releasing the products that change the focus of the world. It's going to be those companies introducing products to Australia that they think are relevant in their time. So what I mean by that is I think the personal home theater is going to continue to grow. I think the personal office is going to continue to grow. I think a lot of us by the end of 2021 will, if not already, have a dedicated space in their houses for work. I think the future of home design is going to change. I think display homes that would be built in 2021 will have much greater focus on having a personal office, will have a greater focus on having a dedicated home theater. And we'll be starting to think about dedicated spaces away from living areas where you can actually concentrate and get work done. That's where home design will need to go. I think appliances are going to continue to evolve and change. I've already spoken about how we can talk to them, and we're going to continue to see how appliances will talk to each other. And it's as simple as me following a recipe on a Google Nest Hub, and that recipe or that smart device communicating with my oven for the preheating instructions, making sure that what I've got in the fridge is ready to go, or that it's even there, that I can continue doing the recipe. It's also going to communicate with a dishwasher to adjust the settings for the dishes, the dirty dishes that are set to come inside that dishwasher. And we're going to continue to see the innovation in the laundry as well, whether it's washing machines, the dryers, all these fancy things that take away the need for us to iron. Our vacuums will probably get smarter as well. Heck, I love the fact that mine can mop and vacuum and even have cameras built in for surveillance if I want it to. But I'd be curious to see where that goes as well. I think we're going to see a lot more around the home. And as much as we always want innovation to take us out of the home, to explore more, to do more when we're out and about, I think the biggest changes we're going to see are inside the four walls of our house. I fundamentally think that's where we're going to go. Now, I'll finish with this. Look, it's been a big year. It's been a big year for us all. We all deserve a break, and I hope you've been having one. I hope that between Christmas and before you all go back to work, you are spending some time to recharge and get back and ready for 2021. A lot of people are looking at 2020 as a good riddance type year, as I can't wait to forget that year. And look, for a lot of people, they have a lot of good reason as to why that is. But the fact that you've all made it to the end of this year is something you should all be really proud of. If you've maintained your sanity, you've maintained your career, your job, and income, you've kept yourself healthy, your family is still around you, I think you've done really well. There's a lot of people who've done it a lot worse. And for a lot of people who are just looking at 2020 as a year to forget, I think it's actually a really good year we should be learning from. The ways that we've been able to connect with one another, the ways that we've been able to adapt and adjust, and the things that you've learned by doing that are things that I hope nobody actually forgets in 2021. The idea of people running back to going back to normal, I think, is crazy. I think when you think about all the things that have happened this year, you need to extract all those good bits and figure out how to keep those good things going in 2021 and how to continue to adapt and adjust, because there's no such thing as normal. There's no such thing as what works for everybody. Decide what works for you. And when you think about the way that we've been operating this year, everyone has had to find out what works for them. And that's going to be the way it should be in 2021, not just conforming to the old ways of working. Think about the way you connect with people, the way you work, where you work, and how you work. They are all things that you should be in control of. And I'm excited. I'm really excited for 2021. I'm really excited to see where technology goes. I think we've got a really good rhythm now in that companies have adjusted to how we're going to work more in 2021. I think the products that we'll see in 2021 will blow our minds, as they always tend to do, and I'll be here to talk about them. I really appreciate everybody who supports this show, who listens to this show. Our numbers this year have skyrocketed. It's been amazing. Maybe it's through interviews or other things that we're just seeing the numbers go up and up, and I'm forever grateful for that. And I appreciate every single listener that does come on, and I continually pinch myself at the fact that even if one person was listening to this show, I would still do it. Because if I can help one person, I'm extremely grateful for doing that. A massive thank you to my sponsors, Navman and Boost, throughout the year. Kaspersky came on board for a short part of support this year as well, and I appreciate that too. I don't do this podcast for the money. I have a full-time job that helps keep a roof over my head. This is absolutely a hobby and something that I just do because I enjoy helping people. We'll keep the Boost support number open. I absolutely loved hearing from you all, and I encourage you all to continue to message me 0467-439-078. We'll get back to questions from next week. But thank you again for listening. Have an amazing and safe 2021, and thank you for being with me for 2020. Speak to you soon. Bye.